This is where we break through the traumas and the mental illnesses that are holding amazing parents back from their dream family life. You can find more resources at wandahoward.com. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started. Welcome back, everybody, to the Successful Parents Podcast. I am your host, Wanda Howard, and my co-host,
Emery Howard.
And we have an amazing guest with us. I've been super excited, and Emery is going to introduce him for us. So go ahead, Emery.
So today we have Douglas Richens, the owner of Grace Space Experts and a top-tier executive and relationship coach. And he's got six kids.
And he has six kids. So, Doug, there's so many things that I could say about you, and Emery is just barely meeting you, so I'm sure she'll have questions as we go. But to Sounds get good. Everybody more aware of who you are, I've met with Doug a few times now, and absolutely amazing human. And I feel sad already that I don't think it's even possible in this one episode to fully capture everything that Doug is about and all that he does. But we're just going to go from the beginning and do the best we can.
Yep. Just go after it. Emery, you did great. Thanks for the nice introduction.
You're welcome.
Yep, you did awesome. So first off, Emery, do you have any questions before I start?
Not really. I mean, yeah, but it's kind of a gray area since I just barely met the guy.
Okay, sounds good. Well, and that's perfect too, because he's the owner of Gray Space and Gray Area. So I see what you did there.
I didn't mean too much.
So, Doug, for everybody who has no idea who you are, what you're all about, what got you into coaching in the first place?
Oh, geez. You know, it's been in the course of my professional career, from the very beginning, I was an educator, a trainer, a coach. And I've always loved helping people move forward. I've been a champion for the underdog all the way through. And I've just been really, really privileged to be able to go so many places and work with amazing people and learn from the best in the world. And I finally reached a point with the day job that I had before in the career that I just needed to raise my own voice and do a little bit more frontline work rather than the big corporate work that I was doing. And so this was a great fit. And so it just kind of opened up. I didn't run hard after it. It just kind of arrived.
That's so cool. So what were you doing beforehand then, before you started coaching?
Mostly trying to keep track of my children. that's the day job, really. My wife, Janine, and I have six kids. And professionally, I worked for the LDS Church. I was with the church education system for about 14 years and found myself with an opportunity to really focus on helping teachers all around the world teach students that were struggling with disabilities and with other life challenges. And I loved that. It was really tender. And then I kind of shifted over to a different department inside of the church and was able to do something very similar church-wide. So we addressed suicide prevention, mental health, abuse, disability, incarceration, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And loved organizing that work and being a part of it.
And that is something that I want us to dive even more into, because that was really how Doug and I kind of got to meet each other through a mutual friend. He said that I needed to meet Doug because of the work that he's doing, but also because of his background with the church. And that's all I know. That was everything that I had heard. And then when we got on a phone call and started talking, I was like, holy cow, this guy has done a ton of work and a ton of amazing things. So for those who don't know, the church that we were talking about is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And why this stood out to me so much when I met Doug is in one of our conversations, Doug, you mentioned this phrase that now I thought I wrote it down and I have not been able to find it since we talked, but about the kind of the mental illness side of strict religion. What do you remember that word?
Scrupulosity.
Yes, there you go. Scrupulosity.
Yeah, and that's a pretty clinical term.
Yeah,
that's a serious diagnosis for when someone's religious zeal dominates their life to a way that it really is interfering with their life. So
yes, and I want us to go in a little bit more on that too. So, but just kind of as a cliffhanger, I guess, for everybody for a moment, just be thinking about that word. But for me,
I can't even remember it.
Scrupulosity. Yep.
Got it.
Pretty good right there.
But for me, I dealt with this quite a lot growing up. And so religious decisions and just daily decisions in my life, I have had to be very aware and very conscious of how to do things differently than what I originally thought growing up. And because of that, it's very important to me that I make choices that are in alignment with the religion that I am a part of, with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so when Doug had talked a little bit about his experience with this word and everything that comes along with it, with people that deal with that, but also his understanding of very well understanding of like the church's policy on everything and the handbook and exactly how decisions were made by quorums of the 12 apostles and everything of how to help people with mental illness and abuse. And that was a huge comfort to me, because it's really hard at times trying to accept people's advice or their wisdom, because there's always that fear in the back of my mind of, is this over the top religious view, or is this a kind of laid back religious view that I don't want to be like just staying on the sidelines, but is it a fair religious view, I guess, so to speak. So that was something that was very amazing to me. So anyways, do you have any questions, Em?
What ages are your kids?
My oldest is 24. My youngest is 12, and all six of them kind of stack right in between. So I got kids at college and high school and junior high. We're a busy family.
Yeah.
I thought your oldest would be like somewhere around 15 or older.
No. That's a nice compliment though, that I look young. Thank you.
Actually, I was judging off of the picture in the background.
Oh, that's where you're going. This one back here.
Yes.
That's the tribe. Yep.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit more, Doug, about this word. What does scrupulosity mean?
So it's a really clinical term, right? And that really falls into an extreme category with a credential diagnosis. But it approaches something that's really common for a lot of people, whatever the faith tradition is. And that's just where, our zeal and our goodness to follow the principles and teachings can also kind of get a little out of whack, a little radicalized, a little, just to a point where it can start to interfere with other elements of normal living. So it's a wonderful tradition. For example, if a family were to say a blessing, a prayer over a dinner, right? Beautiful tradition that's shared by people all around the world through lots of faiths. You could go to some extreme with that. And if you forgot to say it, or you could, like, it could really, and if it bothered you 3 weeks later because you forgot to say that one prayer, you know, that could really ebb into a place that's not very helpful.
Yeah. And kind of to give even a little more, you gave an example on one of our phone calls about just a simple little example. And I was like, holy cow, I had no idea that anybody even knew that that was a thing, because I very much, but Doug shared like worrying about what side of the bread to butter and which one is more righteous. And I was like, I had that fear. I legit had that fear.
I didn't mean to pull that one out in a way to open an old wound there, hon. But like, you know, there really is a, there's a space that anything can be taken mm-hmm. too far. And a balanced life is a happy life.
Yeah.
And so we do need the trusted advisors. We need common sense. We need health and vitality, clarity of thought to be able to really right size the way that we live. And of course, it's such a beautiful thing when it's in harmony, right? To have a faith, to have a belief system that strengthens you. And mm-hmm. it's just wonderful. But
what do you mean by you had that fear? You had the fear of buttering the bread?
I'm so glad that this is foreign to you. So, for me, sometimes it was about food. It was about everything, though. What foot should I use first? How should I walk across the room? In the first, like, beginning portion of the day when I'd wake up, I would grab my scriptures that I had right by my bed and I'd read them. I'd say my prayers. And I worried about, wait, should I be saying my prayers first? Should I be reading the scriptures first? Does it matter? And I would stress over, am I doing it righteous enough way? And then as soon as I was done with that part, I was already felt like my heart was racing and I was getting more nervous for the day anyways. And then I would be afraid of like, what side of the bed is the better side to get out of? And I would sit there petrified of, I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now. So yeah, that was a real fear for me growing up of just, am I doing this right? And after talking with a lot of my siblings, a lot of them had that same exact fear. Yeah.
And it connects, it connects inside of the healthy attachments with parents, right? Mm-hmm. It connects across that trust that we have of ourselves, right?
Yes.
We are, at the end of the day, we are just all trying to do our best. We all have a brain. We all have a heart. We all have feelings. And it's just hard to get, when that gets out of whack, we just need some help.
Yeah, exactly. And like you were saying, when you're able to think of it more harmoniously and just in alignment with everything, it does help. Like religion and God definitely does help make decisions easier. And if they're making decisions like that, where they're stressful and scary and overwhelming at every turn, it's gone too far. There's something that needs readjusting. But what was your question, Em?
What do you mean by it was petrifying?
Like extremely fearful.
But like,
is to the point where you can't move.
Petrifying, like petrified wood.
Yeah, that it's called that because you can't move. You can't mentally think of the next thing that you're supposed to do.
I don't like that term, mostly because I've been correcting Ebony every time she said that in that way.
Petrified?
Yeah, that's...
I'm petrified. I'm like, that's not the term. Petrified. Petrified wood.
Well, petrified just means that you're so scared that you don't know how to move. You don't know how to, you can't think through the next problem, right? Doug, is that what you'd say?
Yeah, sometimes you just get kind of locked up or frozen, right? You just can't make a decision. And you're lucky, Em, because you get to just live this happy life and jump around and do your day and make good decisions and you're healthy. Some people, they go through their day and they struggle to make little tiny decisions. They struggle to know what to do. They're afraid of the littlest things. And so, yeah, we just do what we can do to help.
Yeah. So with this religious background as well of just being able to come from the knowledge part of it, of this is the church's standards on things, and this is the protocols that it has. Can you explain a little bit more of what you did there so people can know your understanding of those?
Ask that again. Let me make sure I'm getting this right.
Like your understanding of the church's handbook and the hand that you had and what you did for the church.
Oh, geez. There's 6 hours of our life we'll never get back if I get into that. There's just a remarkable group of very good, thoughtful church employees that help with the mechanical side and the articulation side of handbook. Of course, all the decisions are made at the highest level by the executive councils of the church. And so through the years, I had a role in a technician and getting words right. And I had a role in taking things forward for executive approval and listening to the discussions and the sensitivity that everybody had around policies and practices. It was, it's improving. The rigidity maybe that existed in the past around some issues, people are being left to make their own decisions more and more. And that's a very positive thing, I think. And it was quite a journey though.
Yeah.
Frustrating at times. My role, I received calls from people who had been hurt or felt hurt by policies of the church or practices or behaviors of some member or something, right? And so it was an opportunity to just calm the waters and help people understand what things mean a little bit. And usually worked out really in a positive way. Of course, takes a lot to get me riled. So I just smiled my way through it. But
oh, that's awesome. So what is it that you are primarily focusing on right now? And who do you enjoy helping the very most?
Boy, we are so the Grace Space Experts company, we have amazing coaches, licensed therapists, experts around all these different categories. So we have health and wellness, dietitians, we have licensed therapists to help people work through big traumas and those kinds of things. Some that specialize helping women through anxiety and some that work in business and entrepreneurship. And there's just a lot of beautiful things happening. My corner, it's kind of all over the place. I have clients that are executives with enormous companies and are trying to keep their lives balanced amid carrying huge corporate decisions and busy lifestyle. I also have 20 somethings that are trying to figure out how to adult for the first time, trying to unhook from addictions, sexual compulsive behaviors, or, you know, different kinds of things that are interfering with their life. But my day is generally just filled with beautiful people trying to just function a little bit better. And we make great progress, right? It's just, we're not a talk therapy kind of place. We get up and we move and we learn and we educate and I love all the text messages I get in the evening from clients as they've met their goal or they did their thing and they're reporting back into their coach and we're just really driving forward. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that was another thing that really stood out to me about what Doug is doing is that he kept saying that he's not a talk therapy and that they are very action oriented. And I loved that. So as we talked about it on an earlier conversation, but Doug, tell everybody a little bit more about your philosophy of moving forward and action oriented, because it is absolutely, it's so hopeful and inspiring, and it's such a breath of fresh air.
So in my employment for all those years, so much of it revolved around mental health, mental and emotional well-being, right? And I had access to incredible specialists where I could learn and ask and help develop the practices and the policies for the church. I also had access to see how people around the world treated the mental strains that they were under. And the whole world doesn't apply the same set of rules that we do here in the United States. And there were traditions around in other countries that were incredibly powerful and beautiful, very simple. And so in a nutshell, I think I prescribe to a model of treatment that's rapid recovery. The brain, my studies of the neuroscience of the brain have taught me that the brain can change very quickly. Yeah. And in the unconscious mind work that we do, we can help people disassociate old emotions. Just figure out a better way. It really comes down to what meaning you make and connect to the events that you've been through.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit more about this one too, because when you talk about dissociation from emotions, my brain immediately, like, this is one of the things that I've heard so many coaches say, like, you get to choose how you feel about that memory, or you get to choose what this thing actually means to you. And while, yes, I agree, there's something still from my past and upbringing, or I don't know how you want to put it, but something still inside of me that says, but what if that's justifying? Like, if I tell myself good enough thoughts and feelings about some memory or some experience, and I don't feel guilt, or I don't feel saddened or hard by it, or if I don't feel the hard things, then am I just going to learn to justify my actions and never change? And how, religiously speaking, how does that fit into like not justifying our actions and being able to choose how we feel about stuff? Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Yeah. And that's a great question. If we go back 5-6 years in your life and we lift up an event, and I would never need to know what the event was, right? It's enough that you know what it was. And the memories of that are interfering with your life today. Maybe it was a sense of betrayal or something like that. You did create a meaning from that event already. And that meaning that you created was part of the helping you to survive, mm-hmm. right? To get through it initially. Or perhaps you created a meaning that you just adopted from somebody else, right? We just assume that if someone does something bad to us, we're supposed to feel horrible for years, right? And we don't have to, but so we can buy into, we can buy into some meanings that are culturally acceptable, but in reality aren't helpful. Or we can create meaning that in the moment helped us get through, but now they're unhelpful. Okay. So, and it's not a cognitive process. It's not about going back and just saying, okay, I logically know that I'm going to change what that event went through, right? It's an emotional experience. It's your unconscious mind having a deep shift in what emotions are triggered with that memory. It's gentle work. It's beautiful. And it really helps people kind of pull up from all of that interference, all of that noise going on in the background.
Yeah. Well, and I want to, at first, when our first conversation with Doug, when he talked about that, there was still so many things of like my conscious brain wants to be like, but that doesn't make sense. I don't get it. But we actually had an opportunity where Doug walked me through a session and we did some timeline therapy. And that was my first experience with timeline therapy up to that point. And it was amazing. Like, it's been about 2 weeks now since our mm-hmm. last call. And I have just been witnessing kind of the layer of trauma that has shed off of me since that session. And it's like you said, it's not like this cognitive me just critically thinking through it well enough that I have a better attitude now. It's just there's more internal peace about the stuff that we worked through. So it's fascinating to me that the brain can do that. It's also very hopeful because I have definitely thought and rethought and rethought and overthought a ton about every little thing that's ever happened, trying to figure out the best way to move forward with it. And the timeline therapy was very rejuvenating and hopeful for me. So that was very
cool. You know, sometimes it's direct, like the session that we had and the things we were working through, it was very targeted. Other times it just happens in the flow of life. Here's an example from my life. My dad passed away many years ago now. And in the night that he passed away, things happened and I wasn't able to be by his side. And I felt a tremendous amount of regret from that. It really bothered me. It interfered with my sleep. It interfered with a lot of my day for months and months and months. Well, all of a sudden I'm on a phone call with my older sister, who's an absolute sweetheart. And she just casually said, you know, as I expressed to her that I still feel regret that I wasn't with dad when he passed away. She just casually said this. She said, well, you know, he wanted to be alone, right? I said, what? She said, think about it. Think about all the big things dad went through. He always wanted to handle it alone. He never wanted us to suffer. Like the last thing he wanted was for us to have to sit there and watch him go through this. You know, this was picture perfect for him. And with that casual comment, like it wasn't therapy, right? It was just a big sister helping a little brother. All of a sudden, that emotion, that deep connection, the meaning that I had placed on that shifted, and it has never bothered me since. I have all the memories, but I'm also relieved that things went the way that they went and that dad was able to go through that experience just the way I know he wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, and so this happens to us all the time in real life. And then sometimes it's helpful to meet with somebody and kind of take on a few of these pieces in a direct way.
Join us next week for part two of this podcast. Thank you again for being a part of our podcast family and for the difference you are making right now in the world and in the walls of your own home. If you're wanting to support parents everywhere, you can do that by leaving a rate and review. This helps so many find connection and answers they are searching for. Also, don't forget to go to wandahoward.com and get your own free parenting blueprint. I love you all, and we will see you next time.